Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Show. I am Blake Harrison. Joining me as always is Stuart Whiffin. Oh my God. 300 is done, mate. We're recording this like... For me, like a day after I've watched it. For you, might be more. We'll get into how we watched it in a minute. But Jesus Christ, UFC 300, it lived up to it, didn't it?
100%.
Is this the greatest card of all time? You're older than me, so you'll be able to remember more cards. That's why I ask.
I think UFC 7 was good.
It was insane.
That UFC's been existing and to how it's evolved to then deliver something like this, it was ridiculous. And yeah, it was just done everything I thought it would do. And I can't wait to break it down. But before then, we need to chat about our sponsor. We are sponsored by Ferocious Fightwear. If you're watching this, then you can have a little look at on our desk and you will see Rashgar's some shorts. Some wraps and gum shields. So head over to ferociousfightwear.com, check out their stuff. And also, I was chatting to him this week, we will have a discount code for you soon. It will save you some money as well. Ooh. Don't say we don't spoil you. Right, now then, how did you watch it?
So I, like, my job is mad because Friday evening, I was like, that's it. I'm going around my brother's house Saturday night. We're going to watch UFC. We were even thinking, we're going to do a little gym session at like 10 o'clock at his local gym. Then we're going to go back, watch the fights, probably undo all that gym work by having like a KFC or a Domino's or something like that. And an audition came in that I have to tape for. And it came in late Friday night and it's in for like early this week. And I know if I stay up until like 5, 6 a.m.
And some.
Really, yeah. Well, whatever. If I stay up till like 7 a.m., whatever it is, and that would have been a 24 hours awake for me because it was my son's birthday on the 13th. Right. So he got us up at like before 7 because it was his birthday. And so, So I plans changed. Then I took the responsible approach and decided to... Have a normal night's sleep so that I could then work the next day on everything that I needed to do for the audition. Is what it is. I don't think I've ever been more gutted about getting an audition. Don't get me wrong. I want an audition. Yeah. Love having an audition. But it was like when I was watching that card, I woke up at 5 a.m. Sunday morning and went downstairs, watched the card, didn't wake the family up, all that stuff. And when I was watching fight after fight get better and better and better, and then that oh my God moment.
Well, I was awake for that.
When I was watching those moments and the kids had then woken up by that point, because I watched it from the Garbrandt fight all the way to the end as it should have been watched. By the time I got around to all that stuff, it was maybe like 7 a.m., stuff like that. People started to get up or whatever. And I felt like I wanted someone with me. I wanted to watch it live. I wanted to have the moment of it all.
Yeah.
And just to come down again, because like after the Max fight in particular, then going on to the Zhang Weili fight, I've obviously fast forwarded after the Max fight and all that to get to the Zhang fight. And I was like, I wasn't ready for it, man. I needed to like decompress. I needed a moment to just recover my senses and realized what my eyeballs had just seen.
Yeah.
And Yeah, so I was like, I kind of really, I'm a bit gutted that I didn't get the kind of like with your mates or my brother or whatever it is, watching it the way it should have been live. But I mean, it was still a great card to watch on a Sunday morning anyway. I mean,
absolutely.
I wouldn't have wanted to watch anything else on a Sunday morning in my dressing gown.
Totally.
What about you? How did you watch it?
So a friend of the show, Scroobius Pip, invited me over, said, did I want to go around and watch it?
I didn't get an invite. And so, rude.
It's a bit rude, isn't it?
Rubius Pip. Rudius Pip.
Yeah. Rudius Prick. so we... but I had to work, so I've been working the club a lot, so I had to work this Saturday, which kind of put the brakes on any plans to watch it live, really. And so what I did do, I had a little moment at the club where I thought, I'm just going to sling on YouTube and just see that. And literally, as soon as I typed in UFC, someone had uploaded Bobby Green and... Cody Garbrandt's fights.
Oh, right.
So I was like, oh, God, fuck it, I'm watching it, right? So I watched them on the computer at work, kind of trying to keep one eye on that and one eye on the CCTV. And
hey, a fight's breaking out. Oh, no, that's supposed to be happening on that screen. Yeah, no, fair enough.
Ultimate violence on this one. Please no violence on that one. but, yeah, so I've done that and then... And then I sort of, you know, got on with work. And then I sort of got out from work at about 3 o'clock. And I just drove home and I just thought, right, I know what I need to do now. I need to go to bed. Mm. I need to go to bed because I've got to go to Cambridge the next day. And I need to be kind of functioning. But I had a stressful night at work and I got in and I just thought, maybe I'll just watch one little fight. And so I thought, right, I'm going to have a can of beer and I'm going to watch a fight and just... sort of decompressed from the night. And so as I got in, I literally just caught Bonickel and then basically as I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And after the Max thing, I put on our little group, OMG. And then he was like, no spoilers, I've just got up.
Yeah. Like, so you got home and then actually just watched the whole card?
No. After that, I just thought, I've got to watch the rest tomorrow.
Don't get any better than that, like, does it? That is a good place to shut off.
I was just thinking, like, and I got into bed and I was, well, we'll talk about that fight when we get to it on the show. But, and then I got up at about 11 yesterday and then sort of filled in all the blanks of all the other fights. But, after Max, I was like, bedtime now.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? You're sort of exhausted. Even Dana White commented on this thing of like, Zhang Weili and Yan Jianan was actually a really good fight.
Yeah.
But the life and the energy had been sucked out of the crowd by what they just witnessed in the Holloway-Gaethje fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like, mate, there's no, you could put on the best fight ever after that. It doesn't matter. You can't. Look, there's only so much energy you as fans have got to give. You know what I mean?
We are talking way too much about that fight and we're not even on it yet. So we'll get to it.
You've
we'll
done
get
your photos, haven't you? Yeah, look, you've done your photos. Where
so,
you've
I mean,
got,
let's
like,
not look disappointed at this fight. Because
I'm not disappointed at the fight, but there's only one fight I want to talk about, Stu, and you're making me wait.
Right. But, so let's talk about... former guest of the show, Jamal Hill, and Pereira. Because, obviously, we spoke about it in the pre-fight show and we spoke about it when the news broke that, was this an underwhelming fight? You know, on paper, it's not got superstar power like some of the other fights that were discussed had. But you got the good stuff. And then this come and it was like, right, what is going to unfold on this fight? And, well, it didn't last long.
That's exactly what it needed. After the Max fight, and the Zhang and Jiaonan was good, but it somehow went five rounds, and we'll get into all that. But you kind of... I think we were ready to stop. We were ready to go, guys, thank you so much for this incredible card. Obviously, another amazing fight would have been great, but I think everyone was like, first round knockout's great now. I mean, I imagine everyone in the stadium's like... yeah, I just kind of want to go home and just like have a drink and just settle. Like, I don't know, just chill about what's just let it settle.
Yeah,
that Holloway Gaethje fight was just crazy. But
and I was freaked out by the kind of the switch that Hill took, because we see the first bit of sort of media day footage where he went up to him and asked him to sign his shirt, and he was being very friendly, and then he started sort of giving it a bit, and it was like, oh, okay. And I don't know if he was just trying to sort of mess with Pereira's head, but I mean, you see that guy's face when he's doing anything, let alone, like, I imagine that's what he's like pushing his kids on a swing over the park. It's that same face. He's just, it's just...
Do the face?
It's,
there you go.
It's just all business. And... would you like a cup of tea, darling? Jesus, that film was really sad.
It's good. I like it.
Thanks.
We'll bring back your Alex Pereira impressions for the next few weeks.
Let's do that. Let's do that. But the genius of this fight was, like, the knockout was fucking what you'd expect,
this
right?
Incredible.
The left hand just put him to sleep. But it was the low blow first.
Oh, this is what I want to talk about.
And then Herb goes in to stop it, and he just so calmly just goes...
But he doesn't even look at Herb.
Yeah.
He just puts his hand, and he's like, no, no. It's like stone hands, more like stone nuts.
Yeah.
He's like gets a kick there, doesn't affect him at all.
Yeah.
Everything about Alex Pereira is made of stone.
Yeah.
And then he just, like, palms off Herb, just like... doesn't give a shit about what Herb's coming in to do. But it was really interesting because in the post-fight press conference, I think he was saying that basically that was to do with once he, because Hill's southpaw, it just needed a bit more time to set the distance and work out where the distance is going to be. So he's going to throw a few low kicks and just get the distance right. And once he got the distance... that's when the low blow happened. That he was like, no, no, no. Like, if he said if Herb came in there and he went away, he'd have to reset the distance, which would have taken more time. But he was like, I know he's in my sights right now. And then, boom.
Yeah.
That's it. Once he's got him in his sights, he's like, I don't want to stop now. So he just took that shot to the nuts and then just carried on and landed within... 5 seconds later, landed a huge kind of like shovel uppercut.
Yeah, it was. It was a kind of sort of, and as they sort of said, it looked like it didn't even, it only got two of his knuckles actually landed in the shot, which just, I mean, he's got big old shovels for hands as well, but the fact that with just that amount of power, like with that sheer power he's got, even a shot like that, because Jamal Hill's eyes rolled as soon as that shot landed, and it was pretty devastating. I mean, fucking fantastic shorts as well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the 300 shorts. Yeah. Like, you had Max with the floral shorts. Gaethje was just, like, they were kind of just black. I don't know why.
Yeah.
They was meant to be, like, custom as well, but I'm like, I didn't really see a huge amount of difference
maybe
with them.
Maybe you realised he might be going to a funeral that night.
Oh, fucking hell.
But
Pereira, Zhang, and Max, I loved all the unique shorts. I think the UFC should be doing more of that, really. Get a bit more individuality into the fighters and stuff. I really like it. But, yeah, he did all this with a broken toe as well. Alex Pereira broke his toe a couple of weeks ago and was like, well, I'm not pulling out a 300 just because I've got a broken toe. And you could see him kind of fiddling with it
afterwards
after the fight. Yeah. And so he's just, what a warrior. Absolute warrior.
Right, so it opens questions now because...
Before we do, can we just say... Hill's game plan. Like, I know I'm not a coach or a fighter or anything like that, but I'm like, I know you're a striker, Jamal, but you're going up against, like, a multiple-time kickboxing world champion. Maybe don't just kickbox with him. Maybe do something else. Maybe try a takedown. As I said in the preview show, if you go for a takedown, if you don't get it, it just gives him something else to think about. It makes him think, I'm not in a striking contest here. I'm in a mixed martial arts contest. Mm-hmm. There's more for me to deal with here. And it might open up your striking. Hill didn't do that.
Mm.
Hill just went, I'm just going to strike. And he didn't even like go, ah, oh, fuck it, I'll rush him and do something crazy. Yeah. It was like, I'm having a measured kickboxing match. I know that fighters have this thing of being like, some fighters, I feel, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing in some ways, but some fighters are quite deluded. But I think that you have to be, because it's such an unforgiving sport that if you go into the cage thinking, well, the likelihood is I'll get beat in this one or something, then maybe the chances are you will. So you have to go in, even if the odds are massively stacked against you, maybe you always have to go in going, no, 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 I'm a better fighter. People just don't know it yet, but I know it. I'm a better fighter than him. But surely your coach and your team around you should be going, yeah, no, you are better than him. You're great. But for this fight, this is the path to victory, not the thing that he's been a multiple world champion at loads of times. Like Sean Strickland did the same thing against him.
But he might just... Sean Strickland's a very different fighter to Jamahal Hill. I think Jamahal Hill's... like, I think his movement's better. But I guess maybe he knows his power. He's knocked enough people out. Yes, I'm sure he knows all about Pereira's power. We all do. But he might have looked at, you know, Izzy and what Izzy's done to him and just think, I'm probably harder than him. Like, I've just got to get my hands on him. And do I wrestle him or do I take my chances and try and knock him out?
Well, obviously, I think wrestling would have been the way. I mean, this photo here is incredible. This photo that we got up now on the big screen, like Pereira doing that kind of meme celebration of just holding his hands out as if to say, this is what you get when you mess, you know, fuck around, find out type thing. And Jamahal Hill is looking up at him like, what has just happened? There's like almost, it looks, again, he's just coming round, but in this photo, it looks almost like just shock and fear in his eyes almost. And it's an incredible photo, actually, this one. But yeah, in terms of what's next.
Well, Tommy Aspinall was in the crowd, wasn't he?
Yes.
And you couldn't miss him. He literally looked about 15 foot taller than anyone else on the side of the octagon. When people were getting checked out before they got into the cage, you could just see Big Tom standing behind him. Now, I mean, Ankalaev's the obvious one for me. I think, like, that's...
Yes.
That's the fight where, you know, you'd imagine Ankalaev would probably go with your idea about how this fight should have gone, and go with his strengths. However, if Pereira comes to Manchester and fights Tom Aspinall...
Why would that happen?
That's what the talk was, wasn't it?
No. Not as far as I'm aware.
No, it's definitely what I've been seeing thrown about.
I mean, look.
Would you be up for him coming up to heavyweight and trying greatness at that level?
Not in Manchester. What would make more sense to me, and again, this doesn't make sense for Aspinall. Pereira said in the post-fight interview he wants to fight in Rio at 301 in his home country of Brazil, and he wants to do it up at heavyweight. Now, that makes more sense than doing it in Manchester because Tom is not without contenders. He can fight Cyril Garn, he can fight Curtis Blades. Like he's got people he can fight. Pereira has contenders for his belt, Magomed Ankalaev probably being the main one, but he's not going to want to take that fight quickly. What is the kind of defining factor in all this for me is that UFC 301 at the moment needs a little bit of help. It needs a bit of star power. At the moment, you've got Steve Ursig versus Alejandro Pantoja for the flyweight title as the main event of UFC 301. The next kind of most interesting fight after that is something like 12th ranked or whatever he is, Jonathan Martinez fighting the returning Jose Aldo, which is huge for Rio. It's going to fill that stadium out. It's great for fans of the sport that have been around for a long time. Jose coming back, lovely stuff. We love it. We want to see it. But is that going to make the American public pay $80 for that pay-per-view? I mean, we get it for free because we've got to stay up till ungodly hours or record it and watch it early in the morning. But the American public, that are the kind of core pay-per-view fan base for this sport and for the UFC's business, are they going to pay $80 for a flyweight title fight, which I think could be fun, could be a really good fight. I've got nothing against the fight. But that is your main event with Jose Aldo and Jonathan Martinez as the co-main. I don't think so. Whereas, if you throw in Alex Pereira up at heavyweight against literally any heavyweight, like any heavyweight. I know Derek Lewis has a fight book, but you can do that. Jairzinho Rosenstrike. I did it one that's not going to take him down. Because Tom Aspinall's just going to take him down. Taito Ivasa. Brilliant shout. Do that. Like, does it make a lot of sense for the kind of trajectories of those divisions? Mm. No. But the UFC are 1 month away from 301. They've got their biggest Brazilian star saying he's available and happy to fight on that card, even though he only fought 2 days ago. And he's happy to do it up at heavyweight. Just give him a fun fight. Anderson Silva did it. Anderson Silva went up to light heavyweight and had just random fights with people that weren't for belts and stuff like that, just for fun. Do that. Give him Tai. I love that call. Taito Ivasa. Taito Ivasa versus Alex Pereira. No one's going to take anyone down.
Mm.
You're just going to have a fun, crazy scrap and do that as either a three-round co-main event that just really boosts it, or make it a five-round main event because you're just like, well, it's Alex Pereira. He's a big star now.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Like, to me, I know it sounds a bit mad, and again, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense, but given the time restraints and given the fact that they want a big something else in Rio, I think, to sell that pay-per-view, having Alex Pereira come over and do that against any heavyweight really makes sense. Whereas, but you want to make it a fight that makes sense for him stylistically, I think, because if you're just doing it for fun and you're doing it in Rio, you want to set him up for a chance to win. If you make it Jelton Almeida, if you make it Tom Aspinall, if you make it a Curtis Blaydes, to me, yes, Tom Aspinall, he's got the belt, so there's that, and there's chasing greatness. But I just think any grappler that up at heavyweight is going to be too big for him and just take him down and maul him. Okay. So I'm just not interested in that massively. But yeah,
all right. So Zhang versus Yunang, and I thought this was a great fight.
It was a really fun fight. Again, it was a shame for them that it happened after Holloway-Gaethje, because had it happened before, I think people would be talking more highly about this fight or have thought more highly of this fight. But because it happened after one of the greatest things I've ever seen with my own eyes, it was tricky for these guys to kind of really get the love I think they deserved for this fight. But I mean, props to Zhang, because she beat her twice.
Well,
she beat her twice.
Yeah, so in the first round, She
choked her unconscious.
She choked her unconscious.
She was definitely out.
Like, 100%.
She was out. Now, I don't know what the rules are with that. Like, once the buzzer goes, if you realise someone's... But then I think, I remember back, there was a fight between Merab Dvalishvili and Ricky Simone a few years ago now. And Ricky Simone, I think, won... Did he win the fight by guillotine choke at the end of the round? Because what they realised was, even though Merab would have won on points, the fight ended, and then once the fight ended, they realised Merab was out.
Mm.
So I think they gave the victory to Ricky Simone.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering that correctly, sorry if I'm not, but I think that's my memory of it. So surely, after the end of round one, they should have gone, oh no, she's up. But then she did get up. She got up. She was just all staggering all over the place.
And then, I don't know if you heard that, but they did mention that they said the corner said, do you want me to wake her up? And gave her smelling salts.
Well,
apparently. And I've not heard anything after about this.
I heard something else being said by the commentators much later on, saying something about they're pushing on the base of her nose to open the airways, and that wakes her up. So there's maybe, again, it's all overshadowed by everything else that went down at UFC 300. No one's going to be looking into this, I don't think.
Mm.
But it is possible that they did the smelling salts thing, and Joe Rogan and a few other people saying, I don't think you can do that. I don't think that's legal. But equally, they were saying something else about pushing on the base of the nose to open the airway. So maybe they did that instead. At the end of the day, we don't know, and I don't massively care.
Mm.
I think she fought well afterwards. It's not like she went out in the second round and got smashed up.
She come back on fire.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think how Arrow scored. I definitely gave a couple of rounds to Yunang. I thought she was starting to look really good on her feet, but
I think she was winning round one until she got into that.
I think
smashed up.
Whaley initially was trying to work out the range. And I think, you know, that come with time. But and also I thought Whaley around sort of third round of that looked exhausted.
Yes, that I gave the only round I gave to Yunang was round three.
Yeah, and I think she blew her arms out. But you know, it seemed, you know, towards the end that she kind of found a second wind, and she's fantastic.
It was the grappling. You know, she knew, again, on the preview show, we were talking about the fact that both these women are really top strikers.
Mm.
And if you want to have a fun striking battle, great. And I think what we realized was maybe Zhao Nan had the upper hand in the striking exchanges, but Zhang's a more well-rounded fighter, and that's in this sport, to really be at the elite level. I was about to say you have to be a well-rounded fighter, but you don't, because Alex Pereira has proved otherwise.
Yeah.
But to have a well-rounded game is really important, because when you get a challenger that you go, oh, they're actually a better striker than me, or oh, they hit harder than me, or something like that, you can go to game plan B and go, right, now I'm going to take you down and test that. And that's what GSP made such a great career of. He's like, you know, I'm going to outstrike the wrestlers, but I'm going to out-wrestle the strikers, and that's the safest and best pathway to victory. And that's what Zhang did, and I think that made loads of sense that she did that, and it clearly worked well for her. Again, Zhang, not the most active of champions going forward. She might fight in 9 months' time or something like that. But if she wants to be more active, I think she should just defend that. And I'd like to see her being more active because I do think she's brilliant. If Tatiana Suarez is fit, I just want to see that fight. I know Suarez only came back on like one. Did she win two fights? I know she beat Andrade recently, but I think she might have had a fight before that that she won as well. She's phenomenal. She's a really, really good fighter. She did enough to deserve a shot years ago and then got a horrendous injury and was out for a long, long time. To me, it makes sense to just go, let's just do it. Let's just do that fight because she's the most interesting fight for Zhang. You could do Jandiroba because she's highly ranked and on a free fight win streak, but I don't think anyone massively cares. Whereas Tatiana Suarez, again, to people that were around when she was doing good things 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, they will be looking at it going, yeah, make that fight. Newer people may not be as fussed about Tatiana Suarez or may not be aware of Tatiana Suarez enough, but Tatiana Suarez has got some brilliant skills. She's a fantastic wrestler. She can do really well. And she, in my opinion, I think I picked her in our thing to be the champion at the end of the year. So I really want to see that fight. I want Zhang Weili versus Tatiana Suarez. That's what I want to see next. But whether Zhang even fights again this year, we will have to wait and see. But that's the fight I'd like to see next.
Okay. Let's just get to the good shit.
Fucking finally. All right. Oh my God.
I mean, was this the greatest moment in the history of UFC?
It's up there, isn't it? I think, okay, I think it's not the greatest knockout of all time, but I do think it's up there and maybe could be one of the, if not the greatest moments. I'm
so
trying to think.
In regards to knockout, right?
Knockout.
So why is that not one of the greatest knockouts? Are you saying stylistically?
I'm saying because the Korean Zombie Yair Rodriguez knockout exists.
Yeah.
Now, because the fact that it's a 4 minutes and 59 seconds of the final round is, that does a lot. That is an iconic thing. Like for this knockout, for Max and Justin, but also for the fact that Yair knocked out Zombie for but I mean, let me just tell you why. The Yair knockout of Zombie, not only was Yair losing that fight rather than winning, and don't get me wrong, there's a whole different way that you can praise Max for what he did because he was winning the fight. But for me, the fact that Yair was losing the fight and then threw an elbow I've never seen before or since, I feel like, that weird upward elbow that Zombie just ran into. It was so crazy. It was so crazy that I think that to me is still the greatest kind of knockout moment. And also, I still really love the ninja shit of Joaquin Buckley against Vic Sanganite.
That's bananas.
But this will always have a special place in all our hearts
because this is better than the Yair one.
Oh, go on. Why?
Because, Yair had nothing to lose, right? Max Holloway had everything to lose.
Yeah.
Like, he was way ahead on the scorecards, right?
Yep.
That fight was his in the bag, right? So why not just put your hands above your head, showboat a little bit, and like, no, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to point to the middle of the octagon against one of the most insane brawling strikers that is Justin Gaethje and go, let's just fucking have it. Why would you do that? For no other reason.
True BMF.
To just be just pure greatness. And oh my God, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then bam, just dropped him with 2 seconds to go. And it's like, that is ridiculous. At UFC 300, the BMF, right? This belt that I'm now on board with, by the way, right? because I've just seen what a bad motherfucker looks like. And he had no reason to do it. I put on a masterclass, but he just thought, do you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go for it. Bagged himself $600,000 in bonuses.
Oh, my God. He won both the fight of the night and the knockout of the night. Incredible stuff. Max cleaned up.
And then basically, I was sitting on my sofa, everyone was asleep, and I was just doing this. I just couldn't, like, I think my hands were in the air for about what felt like a couple of minutes, because I just could not believe what a fucking wild man, but what a wild man both of them are. But yeah, just what a fucking lunatic Max Holloway is. And throughout it all, just the fucking nicest geezer as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he's the, in my opinion, I couldn't give a shit about this kind of thing that's coming back and that. Just talk about Max Holloway.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see what's going to be happening for Max Holloway next, because...
Well, we'll get on to that. We'll get on to what's next.
Okay.
I want myself a pair of floral shorts. That's what I want. incredible. The fact that he did it in the Hawaiian shorts.
And you think he's old? He's not old.
He's not old in years, but I would say he's getting up there in fight years. Like, he's been around a long time. He's had a few wars, all those things. For me, I still have to go with you, because that just the way he did that elbow was too insane. But this is up there. This is obviously right up there. The thing that to me that was so incredible was everyone thought Gaethje had the power advantage, which I still think he probably did. But Max looked way bigger and more suited to 155 than he did when he fought Dustin Poirier previously. I think he had more time to build up to the weight. I think previously in the Poirier fight when they fought for the interim title, he didn't have as much time, and he still looked like sort of like a slightly skinny but softer whatever Max. Here he looked like he looked big. Look, his arms, I've never seen Max's arms look that big. Yeah. And it looks like muscle. It doesn't just look like fat. So he's clearly prepared properly for a 155 fight this time, which I don't think he got to do against Dustin. The thing that really stood out to me, and at first, I was like, oh, I think he got a bit lucky there. But now that I've listened back to a few interviews and stuff, I'm thinking maybe he didn't get lucky and it was totally meant in this way. But the thing that really changed the trajectory of the fight, even though Max was winning round one, was right at the end when he threw that spinning back kick and Justin Gaethje ducked into it and it clearly broke his nose.
Yeah.
Like, because Gaethje was then on the back foot.
He kept touching. He could tell he was busted up.
He couldn't breathe properly. You know, it's really difficult to keep fighting in the manner that he was doing. He was a warrior in himself, just carrying on to the level that he was, I think, with that broken nose. But Max threw that spinning back kick. He said that Justin's there to be hit a lot when he comes forward. He stays quite still. And so he threw that spinning back kick. But to me, it was a spinning back kick to the body and Justin just ducked into it. So for me, I thought, oh, Max has got maybe a little bit lucky with that one. But then in interviews, he said, no, Justin ducks a lot when he gets into those positions. Yeah. So he always knew that could be a possibility. But I do feel like it was slightly unfortunate for Justin to duck at that time and take it. I don't think that was necessarily seen. I think it was aiming for the body. But then he kept throwing it because he knew it was working and it worked so well for him. In terms of what's next for Max.
Well, he said the ball's running from the mat.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Door at 145.
Yeah.
So.
Or the Matador's running from the bull, I think it was.
It was that.
Yeah.
So obviously he's addressing a slightly sort of confused looking Ilia Topuria. When the camera cut to him, I don't know if he was unaware that the camera was on him, but he looked a bit subdued, I thought. And I don't know, if I was watching that, I'd be thinking, I don't want to get anywhere near Max Holloway right now.
I think it just changed. I think a lot of people thought Justin was going to win, and I think understandably so. I was one of those people because I thought the power would be the difference maker. Mm. And I think actually the way that a lot of fights have worked out, could potentially be the best way both 155 and 145 could play out. I'm quite happy with what's happened, I think, because for me, I think I'd like to see Volkanovski wait, and I'd be quite happy to see Max get the first crack at Ilya's title.
Mm.
And I don't want to see Max versus Islam that much, mm-hmm. because I feel like Islam's skill set won't be great for Max. But I would love to see now Ilya Topuria fight Max Holloway. I think that would be an absolutely phenomenal fight. I think down at 145, Max has always still been a very, very good fighter. He's not had necessarily the power, although he did knock out Zombie, but Zombie marauded forward in a crazy way. But I would love to see that fight. I think that's the fight to make. I think it's arguably now the biggest fight in the division for Ilya as well. I think it's way bigger than a Volk rematch.
Oh, 100%.
So
100%.
I think, I don't know that they'll get it to Spain. I don't think that would work. I think there's a lot that goes into maybe making these events and stuff. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that they'll just head to Spain. Like, we were hearing that Manchester has only recently been like confirmed by the UFC, and we were hearing rumors about Manchester for months and months and months and months, if not the best part of a year, before there was any official confirmation of
maybe
Manchester.
Maybe we're just more tuned into that because it's London and it's home for us. Maybe.
Yeah, but no, I think there's rumors of Spain, but I don't think there was any rumors of Spain until Topuria won the belt in February. Mm. So I can't see them getting to Spain before December. Yeah. Okay. Like, and I don't even know that that would happen because UFC has their places they go, Abu Dhabi in October, New York in November, back to Vegas in December. So I don't think they'd be going to Spain for a while. But maybe I'm wrong. But maybe not even till 2025. So I think this fight could happen in Vegas or New York or wherever. And I think this would be a phenomenal fight, and I really would love to see it. And maybe it's something that Max didn't look too beat up. I think maybe he could turn around quickish and take advantage of that and fight.
His leg, I'm sure, he's fucked.
Oh, his leg will be. Yeah, I forgot about the leg because he did take. But again, like, Max just didn't care that he just took all those leg kicks and it didn't really faze him that much. But everyone was talking about the welt on his legs, and even Dana in the press conference was like, Max is walking. How mental is that he's walking after all those leg kicks? So
600 grand bonus pop might take the sting out of that a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, look, Max has options. He's got maybe more options than any fighter ever at the moment. He could fight Topuria. If he wanted to fight Islam, I'm sure he could say, no, I want to fight Islam. And Islam's obviously booked to fight Poirier, but I know you're very happy about that. He's booked to fight Poirier June 1st. But I think that there's a world in which, you know, either one of them wins, then you could fight Max afterwards, particularly if it was Poirier, because they've got history. Poirier's beaten him twice, but this is a slightly new Max Holloway, I think you could say, especially up at 155. But Max could call for that and get that shot, and I think he'd leapfrog Armin Sarukian, for sure, who we'll get onto in a bit, if he wanted to. But yeah, I think he could wait around to see who wins out of Conor and Chandler, which was announced, which we maybe will do a little episode talking about some of these new announcements that have come out. But Conor Chandler is official June 29th.
Is that 170?
170, but there's no reason why the winner of that fight can't fight Max Holloway for the BMF title, especially if it's Conor. That would be a lot of money. There'd be a BMF belt on the line. Conor would want that belt as well. It would mean something to him to get that third title, even though it's not a real title. But
do you know what? Let's stop talking about him, because until we see...
But no, but it's an option for Max. The reason we're talking about him is it's a viable option for Max to go, let me wait and see what happens in that fight. Because if Conor wins and calls out Max, you know Max is going, oh, well, fuck Topuria. I'll go and get that big bag or whatever against...
It's a way easier fight.
It's a way easier fight. Yeah. It's a really fun fight. The build-up would be huge. Max's star will rise again because he fought Conor way before Conor was Conor.
Yeah.
So he'll get a huge rub off that. People will see this highlight in the build-up to that fight. People will clamour for Max even more. The casuals or the people that don't even know Max but do know Conor will eventually know Max. All that stuff. It's a good business move to go for the Conor fight if he fights him.
And let's make something clear, right? Conor is not either of those two, right? If one either of those two pointed to the middle of the octagon, Conor McGregor wouldn't go anywhere near it.
I think he would.
No way. What if he would?
Why wouldn't he? Like, it's
because
Conor.
He's not that fighter.
I think he is that fighter in a way.
No chance.
I think Conor thinks he's that. I'm not saying that it would work well for him.
I can't believe you're saying this.
Yeah.
That you think Conor would stand in the middle of the octagon and just brawl.
Yeah.
Not in a million years.
I think Connor thinks he's that guy, wants to be that guy, promotes himself as that guy a lot of the time.
No way.
And I think he would absolutely do that. I don't think it would work well for him, but I think he would definitely do it.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't get to that fifth round anyway.
I don't think so either. But I definitely think Connor wouldn't resist the challenge. Connor would be like, I'm all of my freaking billion-dollar empire of proper 12 and this and that and whatever it is about me being the baddest guy, his Roadhouse movie, all that stuff. If he was like, if Max Holloway pointed to the center of his cage and he backed away, that's like, what does that do for your business?
I don't think he goes in.
I do. I definitely do. I also think it's the best chance he's got of winning because he's got power.
Yeah.
I think that'd be the best chance he'd ever win in anyway. So if you have to pick, I want Topuria. That's who I want for Max next. That's what makes most sense for me. He does have loads of options. What's your pick for Max if you could pick?
Yeah, I'd really like to see the Topuria fight. He seems to be like, I do feel a bit sorry for Topuria because I think he beat the people's champion, Volk. And I think people love Volk, don't they?
Yep.
And so, as much as we all know how devastating Ilia Topuria is, I don't think he's very liked outside of his home countries. So
I don't know.
And like,
I'm not sure about it.
And so I think, right, he's going to go from that, and then he's going to fight Max Holloway, who everybody loves. And I just think he's just going to be forever the bad guy now. But
he'll definitely be the bad guy in that fight. Everyone loves Max, especially now.
I think it's a really good fight. I think I'd be interested to see how Topuria would approach it because I think Max's boxing is obviously ridiculous, but Topuria's boxing is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know off the top of my head, looking at the stats, I'm imagining Max has got a reach advantage.
Oh, yeah, by a long chalk I would have expected.
And but obviously Topuria's got very good wrestling.
But Max has got great takedown defense. So, again, that's the reason I really want to see that fight. Topuria would have the power advantage.
Yeah.
And I know we've just seen something crazy there, but I think when you look at their records, resumes, whatever, you can see Topuria.
100%.
There's evidence that he hits harder than Max Holloway, especially down at 145.
But does he hit harder than Justin Gaethje?
I doubt it. But that's the thing. I don't remember Justin landing massively, except him. Was it round four where he dropped him?
Yeah. But he was throwing them like wild overhands, trying to kind of make up the distance. But, I taking nothing away from Max, I do think getting your nose bust like that and then you've got Max Holloway jabbing and teeing off on your nose. Like we saw it with Robbie and Rory McDonald, you know, the pain must be unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And to like not being able to sort of fight at your best because you've got another big problem that you're dealing with, breathing. Yeah. That's tough, man.
I think this is actually a really good thing for Volk as well because I think the UFC might want to capitalize on Max's kind of extra bit of star power he's got now.
Yeah.
And I think that Volk has beaten Max three times and Max has said, if I get the belt back, I would just shout out Volk immediately because I want that back. I want to beat him at least once before he hangs up his gloves. And I think if you're Volk, you're probably thinking, well, maybe I've got more chance to beat. I know how to beat Max. I've beaten him three times. Mm. Topuria is a bit of a tougher nut to crack maybe for him, although he probably wants to get that one back. Mm. But if you're Topuria and you beat Volkanovski, then Max Holloway, and then maybe had a rematch of Volk and beat him again. I mean, Jesus Christ, you're really laying down the early... you're beating the legends and you're laying down that kind of pathway for like, can you go on to be the greatest featherweight of all time? You know, we say it with every champ, it seems. There's Aldo, Max, Volk, all of them are in the conversation for the greatest ever. And depending on how you measure that, you go one way or the other. But if you're Topuria and you get those three wins off the bat...
This win for Max, as you said when we first started talking about this fight, it offers up so many more fun possibilities than it had just in one.
Yeah.
So I do think it's good. But do we think about
what's next for Justin or do we just let him recover?
just let him go and
let him recover.
Get his new nose done and that boy needs to rest up. Oliveira Sarukian, I mean, he had two fights, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
apparently knocked the guy out.
Did he knock him out?
Yeah.
No.
Apparently knocked him out. I was reading it this morning.
If you don't know what we're talking about, there's a video going around of Armin Tsarukyan making his way to the cage, and I don't know what a fan does, leaning over the barrier or shouting something at him or touching him. I don't know what he did. But Tsarukyan then leans back over the barrier as he's sort of going past him and you reckon actually knocked him out.
That's what I'm reading.
Wow. I know he threw a punch. I didn't know whether he connected or not. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's not fucking good practice, is it?
It's not great. I know Dana, I think, made a joke about the fact that they might get sued over it and stuff. But... yeah, I mean, it's not great. I mean, Tsarukyan, I've been a big fan of for a long time, and I think he's really, really, really good. And I've said for a long time, he's the best stylistic matchup to fight Islam Makhachev, and I really want to see that fight, and I'm hoping now we might actually get that fight. But he doesn't do himself many favours, Tsarukyan. Like, there was that whole thing he had with Bobby Green before his last fight, where him and, like, five of his mates just surrounded Bobby Green. And you're like, mate, he's on his own. Just leave him alone. And then now he's potentially or allegedly or whatever knocked out a fan, like not doing himself any favors at all with regards to those kind of things. However, he is a good fighter in the old cage, isn't he? I know this was a close fight. It was a split decision. I believe I gave it to Armin. I was surprised it was a split decision. But he definitely got himself in some tricky situations with Charles.
That right at the very end as well.
Yeah, that guillotine in the first round, that Das choke in the third round. Like, he put himself in some really bad situations. However, he did what he needed to do when he needed to do it. And
I think the crowd were getting a bit frustrated with the fight. Like, there was quite a lot of booing. But yeah.
I think they were a bit quick to boo the crowd, to be honest, which is crazy. I mean, it was such a great card. Maybe because the card was so brilliant for so long that maybe any fight that was just kind of average was getting booed. I don't know. Because I didn't think
maybe
this
they
was a
just
bad
had the
hump
with him because they all had to sort of get up out of their seats so first they could stretch out the geezer from the crowd that just been knocked out by him.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, no, it was the right decision for me. I'd say I think the audience didn't like it also because they're big fans of Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a split decision and there's a big fan favourite that loses, I think the audience boos. It's not necessarily an indictment on the fighter that won or the fight itself, but just the fact that their guy lost. I don't know there's a huge amount more to say about the fight. It was close. Some of the big moments were Charles's, but Armand always did more than enough. I think he run round two very clearly, cut Oliveira open with the ground and pound. And it's what I was saying in the preview show of like certain wrestlers. I mean, Armin, as I said, it was a dangerous game for him to play, but certain wrestlers have that skill set where they can be in Oliveira's guard. They can maintain top position and actually do him a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And we saw it with a little bit in chart with Chandler in the first round of their fight. We saw it with Makhachev at points. Armin is of that ilk.
Yeah.
And he can do that to him. And that's why I was always picking Armin to win this fight. In terms of what's next, obviously Islam's fighting Poirier June 1st in, I think it's Newark, New Jersey. And you would imagine the plan is for him to fight again in October in Abu Dhabi. That would make sense. I think Makhachev has come out and said things to the extent of like, I don't care about fighting in Abu Dhabi. I could fight in New York. I could fight here, whatever, blah, blah. But I think the UFC has a sort of tried and tested thing. They know that he's big in that region. Mm-hmm. They know that he will sell out stadiums and do really well. So it makes sense for him to be on the Abu Dhabi card and he'll need an opponent.
Oh, so you're presuming that he's still going to have the belt?
Look, I would love nothing more. I genuinely would love to be able to say that you were right for once and say and have Dustin Poirier there as the lightweight champion, having beaten Islam Makhachev.
Yeah.
I don't think it could happen to a nicer bloke. Mm-hmm. He seems like a lovely guy. He does all that charity work. Like, he's a fighter's fighter. He's a fan's favourite all the time. He's up there with the Maxes and the Gaethjes and the people like that that always put on the best fights for the fans. I love Dustin Poirier. I'd love him to be champion.
Let's leave it there. Okay,
I just
so let's move
can't
on.
Can't leave
to
it there.
He's
just. Let's just be honest. He's. I just don't think his ground game is solid enough to deal with someone of Islam Makhachev's credentials. I just don't think he can deal with him. And Makachev is a decent striker as well. Poirier, I think his mind will be overloaded. Makachev will have, I can take you down, I can throw the high kick, I can do this. There's just so many things for Poirier to worry about. I just think it's going to be a real struggle for him. So when Islam beats Poirier in June, then hopefully, there's the Alex Pereira faces coming back, then hopefully we will get the fight that I've wanted for such a long time, and we get Makachev, Sarukian 2, and that's a really good fight
Makachev
for me.
Beat him on Sarukian's debut, wasn't it?
Yes.
I believe.
Yeah. And Sarukian gave him, I think, Makachev's toughest fight to date. Mm. And that was about 5 or 6 years ago, whatever it was. Sarukian's debut in the UFC, and he got Islam Makachev, and he's still putting a really good performance at the age of like 23 or 24 or something like that. Like, phenomenal stuff. I really want to see that fight again. It makes all the sense in the world to make that fight.
Right. Bo Nickel opened up the main card. Just business as usual, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, you know, I actually thought he would finish it earlier. We spoke about the fact that we thought maybe Bo Nickel and Brundage were put on the main card because they needed something quick to happen before all these long title fights. He did what he was supposed to do. I really enjoyed the moment that he was throwing those really tiny shots to Brundage, and Brundage was pretending to be hurt, going like, oh,
yeah.
I really enjoyed that. But then, unfortunately, it went wrong for Brundage after that. Nickel needs a step up. I don't know who he should get. I don't care enough. I'm not into the whole American wrestling whatever stuff. Give me Diego Lopez, who we will talk about. I talk for ages on Diego Lopez. Bo Nickel, well done, mate. Oh, the best thing about it, my son woke up and came downstairs during this fight.
Right.
And at the end of the card, he pointed out to me that Bo Nickel, in his post-fight interview, had a bogey hanging out of his nose. And it was there for the whole post-fight interview, and that was my favourite bit about the Bo Nickel stuff. Bogey Nickel! Yes! We didn't even come up with that. So if you haven't watched the Bo Nickel Brundage fight, don't watch the fight. Just go to the post-fight interview and watch the bogey hanging out of Bo Nickel's nose.
There you go. Never let it be said we don't give you all the good news on this podcast. Right, okay, so we move to the prelim card. We have got a lot to talk about. And we've been going nearly an hour.
It's a long episode, baby.
So, Alexander Rekic versus Yuri Prochazka.
Prochazka.
That's the one.
Thank you.
I mean, this was a cracker, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's by his own admission, Yuri Prochazka is not a samurai, but I'll tell you now, he is the Easter Bunny of Death. The Easter Bunny of Death has got some chin on him as well.
Do you know what? His fight style is very unorthodox, but my God, I was thinking, get your hands up, man.
Yeah.
Like, Rakic, it's like a fucking truck.
Check a kick as well.
Yeah.
Check a kick, mate. But he just...
He didn't care. And I was thinking, I've got to be honest, at the... When did this finish? Second round?
Yeah.
Yeah. End of the first, I was thinking, all right, I think Rakic is going to take this. I thought he was looking great.
2 years out of the cage, Rakic, this is one of the best performances I feel like I've seen Rakic give in that first round. He was chewing up his leg. Mm. He was landed shots on his chin. It was phenomenal from Rakic.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. Like, he was hitting him with shots that I thought would have probably folded a lot of people. Again, the leg kicks were really, really tough going, I think, to even watch, let alone for Yuri to then hobble around on a bit.
Yeah.
But Yuri just didn't care, just stared through him. That first round felt pretty one-sided.
Yeah, massively.
And then second round comes out and Yuri went, oh, I'm going to do something now. I don't know whether it was a power advantage for Yuri or if it was a durability advantage for Yuri, but
I didn't think Rakic looked gassed or anything in that second round.
I don't think so. Although, I mean, given the two years out, maybe he was a little bit, but I don't think so. I think he just got hit with a shot that he couldn't handle.
I think he would have come out brimming with confidence after that first round.
Yep. Yep. It was, I think, a big right hand. He was just like falling all over the place. Yuri then grabbed him and chucked him to the floor.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't take him down. He just grabbed the Rakic that was stumbling around and just threw him to the floor so that he could have his way with him. Incredible stuff from Yuri Prochazka. One of the most entertaining fighters on the roster, both in and out of the cage, I think. I mean, what do you say? Don't say he's not a samurai. He will mess you up. Called for a title shot afterwards. The situation is, I guess, Alex Pereira probably, if he's defending his title next, will be fighting Ankalaev, I would expect, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe the UFC will want to keep him away from Ankalaev.
Ankalaev's in that room, and he's going, hello? Yeah. Hello? And they're like, unfortunately, your fight style's quite boring. Yeah. And that means that we're not going to give you these big opportunities at the moment. He deserves that shot, 100%. Yes. But I'd like to see Ankalaev versus Pereira. I think it would be, you know, you can't keep feeding... And I'm doing a disrespect to Pereira. You can't just feed him like strikers that are going to be exciting fights. It's mixed martial arts, and somebody who's earned their shot deserves their shot.
Yeah.
But I think Yuri's a superstar. He's got that kill or be killed fight style, and I think you put him in with Pereira, and I think that's a very marketable fight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, we've already had that fight once. I'd be happy to see it again, but I don't think he can get a title shot over Ankalaev right now. I think the thing is what plays out with Pereira. Does he go to 301 and fight a heavyweight like he asked to do at the end of that?
Do you think they'll make an interim if they do?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's any need to.
You think it would appease Ankalaev if he moves to heavyweight for a while? Maybe Ankalaev fights Yuri for an interim?
I mean, I'm sure Ankalaev wouldn't mind, but I don't think Pereira's interested in doing that. I don't think he necessarily wants to fight a heavyweight as a long-term decision. I think he wants to go either for the greatness of winning three belts or for the just fun of fighting in Rio. I think if the next fight card was in London or Vegas or New York or whatever, I don't think he'd say, put me on the next card and let me fight a heavyweight. It's only because it's in Rio that he's doing that.
Yeah.
So if he does do that and fights twice in the space of like a month, he probably will have a long time out. Maybe Ankalaev won't want to wait too long. Maybe Ankalaev fights Yuri Prohazka to get a kind of locked in kind of number one contender.
He shouldn't have to do that.
He shouldn't have to, but he's not in a position to start calling the shots, really, is he? If the UFC go number one contender fight you and Yuri Prohazka, I think he has to take it. I don't think he can wait around and just go, no, I'm fighting for the belt. Especially if Alex fights next month at 301, I don't think he's in a position to go, no, I'm going to wait for another 9 months to take a fight against the champion. I think he has to fight like a Prohazka or someone like that. But if Alex doesn't fight next month, then Alex might be back before the end of the year. And then you might get Ankalaev versus Alex Pereira, which makes sense. And in terms of Yuri Prohazka, I don't know. If he doesn't fight Ankalaev in a number one contender fight, and again, as you said, Ankalaev shouldn't have to do that, maybe he fights Jamal Hill after Jamal Hill recovers. There's not many options for Prohazka because I think he's good and he's high up there. But there's nothing wrong with him getting another win before he fights for the belt. I think that's okay.
Absolutely.
This is the most boring fight on the card, was it?
100%.
Yeah, Sterling Cater.
Yeah, just, I mean, there was a lot of booing going on in this fight.
Yeah.
I don't think Sterling done himself any favours here. The fans, he's not a fan favourite, and he never has been. And, I mean, in fairness, he seems like a nice dude, man.
Very, very talented fighter. It was a really good performance in terms of nullifying Cater.
Yeah.
Cater, it was a very one-sided fight.
Yeah. He looked good at that weight.
Good at the weight.
You know, he didn't look sort of outsized or anything. Yeah, I mean, in regards to... Did he call anyone out afterwards?
Here's the thing, and this is the thing that was the most important factor for me of Sterling's whole performance at UFC 300. He didn't get a post-fight interview.
Oh, he didn't, did he?
He didn't get a post-fight interview. That, to me, speaks volumes of what Dana, the UFC, and clearly the crowd...
He was looking for Rogan as well.
He was looking. They didn't come to him. This is a guy that was a champion in his last fight where he lost the belt to Sean O'Malley. And this guy didn't even get a post-fight interview. I thought that was a bit out of order.
It's
I think
a
he
shitty
should've...
move, man.
Yeah, I think he should have got a post-fight interview.
Everyone got an interview.
But yeah, but to be fair, there was finishes on most of the other fights. Mm. Not all of them, obviously. But Yeah, he did not get a post-fight interview, which is crazy. I think that says it all. That speaks volumes. He did look good at the weight class. But we know that Dana and the UFC aren't huge fans of him. So where does he go from here? Like, great debut, beat the 8th-ranked guy. So he'll be going into the rankings at 8. Former champion in the lower weight class. You would imagine, in a lot of ways, that he should be fighting someone in a number one contender fight. He should be maybe fighting a Movsar Evloev or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if the UFC make him fight behind him, because I don't think he has much sway. I don't think that he has much sway to say, no, UFC, I'm calling the shots, I want to fight this guy. I really don't think it's the case. He was saying, I think, in a pre-fight interview or something like that, that Calvin Kattar was the second highest ranked guy that he was offered. Arnold Allen, he was offered. And he was the highest ranked guy, but obviously Allen only fought recently, injured, whatever, so he couldn't fight him. But
I mean, Kattar,
but the thing is, the UFC didn't offer him a guy in the top five. Yeah. And he's a champion coming up from the former weight class. He had to fight number 8. Would I love to see Brian Ortega? Yes. If I was Aljamain Sterling, I'd call out Yair Rodriguez, because he's highly ranked, and I think Yair wouldn't be able to deal with his grappling. So I think that is an interesting fight for him. I don't think he gets the Movsar fight. I think it could happen, and I think it would make a lot of sense. But I just think there's a lot of fighters in that weight class that are really good, and the UFC clearly aren't big Aljamain Sterling fans. So, but then they don't like Movsar either. So maybe they'll just go, look,
let's eradicate a boring fighter. Well, and I say boring as in, you know, they're looking at ticket sales.
They're looking at ticket sales. One thing I would say is I think Aljamain Sterling is more marketable than Movsar Evloev. So if Evloev is basically knocking down the door of a title shot right now, but he's obviously got to be behind Max Holloway and a returning Volkanovski, he's probably going to have to fight again. So it would make sense that maybe he has to fight once or twice more before a title shot. Again, feels unfair, much like Ankalaev. We can put Movsar Evloev maybe in that room with Bilal Muhammad and Ankalaev, wishing that they had a title shot or having deserved a title shot and not getting it. But so maybe the UFC do that. Maybe they do Movsar because they're like, well, Aljo's like at least a slightly more marketable version of Movsar. Let's do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know what. I also wouldn't be surprised if they gave him Diego Lopez. Like, I really don't know what they'll do with him.
Okay. So we saw the debut of Kayla Harrison against Holly Holm.
Phenomenal.
The difference from the Kayla Harrison that got on the scales to the one that got in the octagon, I mean, terrifying.
Terrifying. I
mean, Holly Holm must have looked across there and just thought, Jesus. I don't know what Holly. I mean, I don't know. She should have just tried to box more.
Holly's game plan. She's even come out and I think said herself, she doesn't know what she was doing.
Got that so wrong.
You're going up against a 2-time Olympic gold medalist in judo, and you clinch against the fence.
Yeah.
What, really, it's up there with Jamal Hill's game plan. It really was not a good game plan at all. If someone has a skill set that is so superior to yours because they've won it in that specific skill set multiple times, Olympic gold medalist in judo or Alex Pereira, multiple time world kickboxing champion, do not do that thing with them because you'll get beat.
Yeah.
I'm
surprised. We've seen Holly beat a judo, you know, superstar, and she done it by boxing, moving. Yeah. And that first clinch, I just thought, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
And it felt like maybe she wanted to prove a point. I don't know. But it was, and I didn't get to hear what her corner was saying to her. I mean, you know, she's trained by some of the best, and it was like, what are you saying to her after that first round? You know, it's like you've got to kind of look at, surely she was going against the game plan. Surely.
I think she must have been. I think she sort of come out and said something to that effect as well. So, look, I don't necessarily think Holly will retire after this, but she is up there in age, and I don't think she's ever getting to the belt again. So
she's one of the greatest female combat
sports athletes ever, yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, like, boxing world champion, kickboxing world champion, UFC champion, like...
Absolutely.
Yeah, phenomenal. Legend. And she's been doing it a really long time.
Yeah.
Fought the best of the best. So, yeah, and has one of the greatest knockouts of all time as well.
And we're now seeing somebody else literally slowly kickboxing all of their moments in her career in Kayla Harrison.
So much power, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see how often she can cut that
weight.
She's
stacked, man.
Her back was massive. She's so powerful. She's vicious as well. PFL, she wasn't allowed to elbow. She made up for that. She is vicious. She is powerful. She will take you down. She will smash you up. Mm. The way she got the choke as well, almost like she just pulled her head up and just really, really...
Strong.
Strong. So strong. I think she probably gets a title shot next. I don't see why the UFC would wait around. She's clearly the biggest name in the division now. Raquel Pennington and Juliana Pena might happen beforehand, and that's fine, because I do think Harrison is probably someone that...
She said she'd fight any of them.
She said she'd fight any of them, but I don't think she's someone that is going to be fighting every 3 or 4 months. That weight cut is massive. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised if we maybe see her at the end of the year. Maybe we get Juliana Pena, Raquel Pennington sometime soon.
Mm.
And then the winner of that fights Harrison in December or something like that. Or maybe in Madison Square Garden in November. But that, I think, is the earliest we'd see Harrison back. Unless she's doing a phenomenal job at the PI and all the science is working for them, then great. But
I think what you're saying makes sense.
I think it's such a big weight cut. She needs to take time, recover, sort her body out, and then go back and do it again. But the great thing about all of this as well, Amanda Nunes put up a little video where she was like being like cupping her ear, would say, "Kayla, you're not saying my name. Kayla, where are you? You're not saying my name." And this to me is the pathway to the best thing that could happen in the bantamweight division. Whoever wins Pennington, Pena, probably Pena would be more fun because she might chat a bit of shit to Kayla Harrison and that might build the fight a little bit more. Then Kayla Harrison goes out and destroys Pena or Pennington, whoever it is. And then we bring back the lioness, we bring back the GOAT, and we bring back, a rivalry here because they were both American top team at one time.
Mm.
And we find out who would win, the Kayla Harrison or Amanda Nunes. And that would be a phenomenal fight as well. I'd love to see that. 2025, Nunes versus Harrison for the strap.
Someone said that the next fight was going to be the one to watch on the card. You're pleased with yourself, aren't you? Because it fucking was one of them, wasn't it?
Such a big Diego Lopez fan. That and his Cheerio belly button. I love everything about him.
Yeah.
His crazy mullet, terrible tattoo. All of it. I love every inch of Diego Lopez. He came in Movsar Evloev on short notice and gave Movsar one of his toughest fights. Then he's gone on is it three first round knockouts on the bounce now? That I think, you check that for me, but I think he's on three first round knockouts on the bounce after the Movsar Evloev loss, including this one over Sadiq Youssef, which was a big step up for him.
Yeah, Gavin Tucker, Pat Sabatini, and now obviously Sadiq Youssef.
Again, not all knockouts actually. I think one of them was a submission, maybe. So I think,
it was an armbar,
multi-talented, great jiu-jitsu, big hands, big for the weight class as well. Like, he's towering over some of these featherweights. He is a problem for that division, and I'm just a big fan of him, and I just want to see him do good things because he's a really fun fighter. He got those nasty uppercuts in the clinch against Sadiq Youssef. He didn't know what hit him, finished him very, very quickly. Now, Diego Lopez called out Movsar Evloev and Ilia Topuria.
I mean, look.
He's getting a bit of ahead of himself, isn't he?
Like, I mean, why not chance it? When you've just done that at UFC 300, the world's watching.
Yeah.
Why not? Like, don't ask, don't get.
He's going to be ranked 13th.
13th now, yeah.
To me, it felt like a bad call out. It felt like he should have called someone out in the 10 to 6 range, like a Calvin Kattar, a Josh Emmett, Giga Chikadze, Bryce Mitchell. Yeah, someone in that vein is who I feel like he should have called out.
Yeah. You left Arnold's name off of that list.
I did, because I don't want to see it, because I think Diego's really good. But also, I think... I don't think Arnold needs to fight someone that far back. I think I know he's on a 2-fight losing streak now, but I think he beat Movsar Evloev.
Yeah.
So I don't consider that much of a loss.
Yeah.
And the fight before that was Max Holloway, and hello, we've just talked about Max. So
and did Arnold put in a better performance against Max than what Justin Gaethje did?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. So,
look,
yeah. I don't necessarily want to see it. If they made that fight, then sure.
Do you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing. I mean, I don't know if Josh Emmett would take it. I don't know. Maybe Bryce Mitchell. I mean, I'm just looking at who's ranked above him. Obviously, fought him. We've got Lerone Murphy, who's been announced that he's fighting Edson Barboza.
Great fight.
Such a good fight. I mean, it's a fantastic division. There's some. I don't know. Maybe Bryce Mitchell. I don't know. Obviously, Calvin Kattar's not going to be fighting. I don't know. I think he's very ambitious calling out the people he called. I think he'll probably get a... I don't know. Maybe Bryce Mitchell, but do you think they're going to fast-track him?
I think Dana said he's a star. Dana said he's a star, and so I think he will get a fighter above him in the rankings. Does he get Sterling? That'd be horrible for Sterling.
It's a great shout.
Does that happen? Does he get... Raheem Sterling, who will be... Raheem Sterling, the footballer? Aljamain Sterling.
Make that fight happen.
Raheem Sterling comes off the pitch and into the cage. Aljamain Sterling and Diego Lopez. Again, I'd feel like that's harsh on Sterling. I don't think he should have to fight behind him after being a champ so recently. But, again, it depends on how the UFC want to book this stuff.
Chikadze got a fight booked?
I don't know. Not to my knowledge, but I don't know. I think any of those names in the kind of 10 to 6 range sort of work for me.
Okay, so should we talk of the biggest Wally of the night?
Oh, man.
I mean, what?
Jalen Turner versus Renato Moicano.
You silly long sausage.
Oh, like, Jesus.
You had it in the bag.
End of round one, catches him with a huge straight shot. I can't remember if it was a right or a left. Catches him flush on the chin. Moicano goes down. And it looked like he was one or two ground and pound strikes away from winning that fight. But Turner just walked away.
I want the 300 grand walk off.
That's what it was. He wanted the walk off knockout. He wanted the 300K. It all got in his head. And rather than finishing the job and going until the ref stopped you, you walked off and allowed Moicano a few seconds to get his composure and get back to his feet. Silly boy.
Yeah.
Silly boy. And then obviously Moicano, who had already realised he had a grappling advantage in round one, got the takedown in round two and just beat him up. Just beat him up on the ground. Huge mistake by Jalen Turner.
Aljamain Sterling must be going, man, they give that geezer an interview and a microphone and they don't give me one, because... He is a madman on that mic, isn't he?
He is. A lot of people... I sort of called this in the previous show that I thought, he's either going to do something really, really fun or he's going to say something that just makes me completely lose interest in him. And unfortunately, it was the latter. You know, I love America. I love... Can you quickly Google something for me? Because I don't know if I'm going to publicly here make myself an idiot. What's the First Amendment of the American Constitution? Because he was saying, I thought the guns thing was the Second Amendment. Maybe I'm wrong. But I thought he was saying how much he loves the
First. The First Amendment provides that Congress make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting its free exercise. It protects freedom of speech, the press, assembly. So it's freedom of speech.
Maybe he did mean that. But he was talking a lot about guns. And saying how much he also loves the First Amendment. Now, to me, that came across as like, you've got your amendments mixed up, mate.
Yeah.
You love it so much, but what you're talking about is the Second Amendment. You keep saying the First Amendment. But maybe he meant the free speech thing as well. Whatever. I don't know. So I'm not going to dig him out too much for that. Because
Americans
maybe
love guns, man.
Americans love guns. Their guns.
We've got a very different opinion on guns in the UK.
The reason I didn't like this post-fight speech, not just because I don't agree with the whole guns thing, but also... It just felt a bit box-ticky for me. It felt like, oh, what do people in the crowd really like?
Yeah,
they like guns. They like me saying America's great. They like whatever amendment they think the guns is. Mm. Like, that's what it is. I'm amazed he didn't say make America great again and go Trump. Like, it just felt like It felt a bit box ticky. Yeah. It didn't feel real. It wasn't like, my dad's just had a child and he's 60. I've got a new baby brother, which was mental and kind of funny. And we all sort of went, oh, all right, Moicano, you're kind of funny now and all this stuff. And the first time where he was just shouting, Moicano wants money. Like, I was like, I can get on board with that as well, you crazy guy. But the whole guns and amendments, I'm like, nah, you're all right, mate. I'm not really interested in that. So yeah, not for me, that one. I don't know who he gets next, but he called out Paddy, I think, Paddy Pimblett. But there was two people on the card that called out Paddy Pimblett.
Yeah, we get on to the other one. Yeah.
Let's move on, though. Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez. Again, because this fight card was so crazy good, this fight sort of went under the radar a little bit. And it was a good fight. It was a close fight. For me, it was the wrong decision. How did you score the fight?
Ooh. See, this was the one that I watched at the club, so I'm not confident enough to start throwing me scores about, because I was also watching people coming through the door being ID'd.
Right, fair enough. So you scored it 30, are you 18, to Andrade?
I probably would have lent on Andrade.
Yeah?
So you didn't?
No, I scored it from Marina Rodriguez. I gave, I think, hang on, where did I... Round one I thought was very close... the thing that made it a bit tricky for me is I felt like maybe Andrade didn't do too much with a ground game in round one, and then Rodriguez actually landed some good strikes on the feet. Round two, I thought Marina was dominating until towards the end, the commentators were all like, oh, she's been caught by something, and she clearly was affected by something, but I didn't actually see the strike that affected her. So I didn't know how highly impactful it was. Maybe it's just the body language of it. I don't know. But round three, I definitely gave to Marina. She was too good on her feet. So,
but I thought Andrade was good on her feet. I like the way that she was basically moving, but I think the range was an issue in that first round. I don't think she was really sort of cracking her too much. But I think what you always get with Andrade, she's always looking for that big shot, isn't she? Yeah. Because she knows that she's got a little bit of dynamite there.
Yep.
I've got to be honest, you know, any other time I'm super hyped for this fight, but there was just too much going on.
Too much going on, yeah. As I say, I'm not moaning too much about the decision. I did score it for Rodriguez, but Andrade won. And in terms of what is more fun for the division, Andrade is a fun fighter, and Andrade is a bit more of a starrier name than Marina Rodriguez. So we'll see what happens going forward. Could she sneak into a title fight against Zhang Weili? It's certainly a fight that a lot of people could be excited for, but I'm more interested in seeing Tatiana Suarez fight for that belt than Jessica Andrade. But we shall see. We shall see what happens there. There was no fairy tale in the next fight.
We're obviously talking Jim Miller and Bobby Green.
Yeah.
Well, if it was decent fight.
Good fight. Jim Miller's face was a mask of blood, to quote Joe Rogan from that Rory McDonald fight. Beat Matt Danzig at 100, beat Gomi at 200, but lost by decision to Bobby Green at UFC 300. Is he 40 now, Jim Miller? I don't know that he's necessarily going to retire or anything. I think he might still just go on and have some fun
fights. If he was going to retire, he would have done it then.
I think so, on that stage. It would have been quite a good way to do it. But I think it's more going to be... I hope he gets the Robbie Lawler treatment. I hope he gets a fight against someone that is a winnable fight. And it's on maybe a numbered card. And it's maybe opens a numbered card. A fight between him and insert young prospect, whatever, that he can beat, but, you know, never know, might lose. And they've got the VTs all lined up for after the fight. And they know it's his last fight. And they, you know, hopefully he gets a win. And then they can do a nice, you know, video thing for everyone in the arena and people at home of all the great moments of Jim Miller's career. And he can have a little moment on the mic and all that stuff. And that's the way I'd like to see him go out. That'd be a lovely way to go.
Sitting on his stool, he said before coming out for that third, I broke my finger and I can't see out my eye. And if you can't see out your eye, the last person you want is Bobby Green doing his boxing thing, because, man, he's good at it.
Very good at it. I think he had one or two moments where he landed a big shot and you thought maybe the fairy tale's on, but sadly not. And then Bobby Green just did what I think a lot of us thought he would do. He had the speed advantage. He was just too much for Jim Miller. Boxed him up on the feet, and then called out Paddy Pimblett as well.
So he'll go to Manchester to fight him as well.
Yep. I think that's the way to do it. Do you, if you're Paddy, who do you want? Do you want Bobby Green or do you want Renato Moicano?
I probably, if I was Paddy, I'd want Jim Miller for that fight that you was just talking about.
No, come on, you could seriously.
I genuinely think if they want to give someone that is a winnable fight.
Paddy's not going to do it. Paddy's going to fight a ranked guy next, I think.
Okay, right. So,
and he's got two guys calling him out there. Who do you bring to Manchester? Do you bring Bobby Green or do you bring Renato Moicano?
Right, so look, Bobby Green is 10 times the star that Moicano is, you know.
Like, really? Still?
Yeah, of course he is. Bobby Green's a, like, he's just, and he's.
Moicano's done really well of late with this whole gimmick. I think he's becoming very popular.
I don't think so. I think Bobby Green's the.
Moicano will be higher ranked. He'll be 10th. Bobby Green will be 14th.
What do you think's an easier fight for Paddy?
I think it's tricky. I think Moicano is more well-rounded.
Exactly.
And so if he can get to Bobby Green and take him down, Bobby Green is the easier fight for him. Mm. But there's no guarantee that Paddy gets him down. And on the feet, I think Paddy could be in a bit of trouble. Mm-hmm. Moicano, could he get caught in a scrap? Because you know how Paddy loves to fight. He loves to just be chin in the air and swinging bombs at people and stuff. Could Moicano get caught? Yeah. Maybe.
So Paddy could not do that against Bobby Green.
No, I don't think so. I think if he comes out swinging like against Bobby Green, Bobby Green's just going to clip him with something and he's going to maybe go down. But if it's... Yeah, if it's Moicano, then the kind of... The jiu-jitsu stuff, it could be fun. It could be really fun to see the grapple in there. That could be a really interesting fight. And we've seen Moicano get hit and, you know, knocked down badly against Turner. We saw Bobby Green get knocked out by Turner as well. I don't know. I don't know what the best course of action is out of those two guys.
If Paddy can make that distance up and not get boxed, then I think he's got a legit chance of tying up Bobby Green.
If he can't take him down... But, he's in a world of trouble, isn't he?
Yeah.
But, whereas with Moicano, he could test out his jiu-jitsu and realise he's got better or worse jiu-jitsu than Moicano. You never know. And on the feet, again, maybe Moicano's got better striking, but it won't be that much better. Mm. So he could catch him with something. So I don't know. I don't know what the best option is.
Okay.
Maybe you go for the higher ranked guy and just go, screw it, let's go big. Go for the higher ranked guy, go for a guy in the top 10. I don't know. They're both calling him out, though. That's the thing. You've got a guy ranked 14th, you've got a guy ranked 10th. Both of them calling out an unranked guy that hasn't fought in a while. When was the Ferguson fight?
Oh, blimey. A while ago now.
Yeah. So he hasn't fought in a while. He's unranked, and people are calling him out that are ranked. So it just goes to show you've had his kind of star power is undeniable. And it's, you know, it's not just Europe, it's America, it's everyone. Last fight on the card. Garbrandt, Figueiredo, two former champs, opening the prelims. Mm. Absolutely incredible. I really loved what TNT Sport did as well. The fact that none of it was fight pass prelims. Yeah. All of them were proper prelims that everyone could watch.
Figgy looks like he belongs in that weight class, mate.
He does, doesn't he? We were saying Garbrandt struggles with big hitters. It wasn't the strikes, it was the grappling. Mm. Which I was surprised at. For a guy that trained for so long at Team Alpha Male, I was really surprised that Garbrandt wasn't able to defend the takedowns better and was struggling with the grappling as much. Cody did look fast and strong in round one. I think I gave him round one. Yeah. I think he was landing big shots and doing really
low
well.
Kicks.
Then Figgy just realised, oh, I can take you down. Oh, okay, I'll just do that. And it was close with, I think, a head and arm choke at one point, but then took the back in the scramble, got the rear naked choke. Figgy, just so well-rounded. As you say, he looks like he suits this weight class, clearly very durable with some of the shots that he took, up, not dehydrating himself so much like he was down at 125. I think he probably fights someone above him in the rankings next. I just need to pull up the rankings to see who that would be. But Petr Yan was always a fight I quite wanted to see, actually. So Figueiredo Yan is still a fight I would enjoy. I think that could be a really great fight to watch. I don't know if Yan has a fight booked or not, but that to me makes a lot of sense. Or I don't know if Sandhagen, Umar, Nurmagomedov is booked, but after a win like this on a card like this, does Sandhagen go, I think I'd rather fight Figueiredo than fight Umar Nurmagomedov anyway, so give me that fight. And you know, if Figueiredo wins against Sandhagen, then he's probably getting a title shot next.
Figgy's not beating Sandhagen, mate.
No, but he's a higher ranked guy. I don't think he'll turn down that fight. I think he'll want that fight. To fight a guy so highly ranked, and it means you're probably getting a title shot after it. Because, I mean, otherwise, Sandhagen's fighting Umar Nurmagomedov,
it
seems.
Who else is there, though? Chito?
Yeah, he could fight Chito. Chito's a good fight.
Chito's going to need a fight,
Chito probably does need a lot of time after that O'Malley.
100%, yeah.
I mean, Jan, has Jan had a fight yet? Or has he had a fight booked, I should say?
I've not seen anything announced for Peter Jan.
Let's see. Peter Jan does not have a fight booked yet. Obviously, he beat Song Yadong recently, so maybe he feels like he needs to fight someone ranked above him, but I don't think so. He was on a free fight losing streak prior to that. So Jan versus Davison Figueiredo makes a lot of sense for me.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
And so what happens with Cody now?
I don't know, man. Just has a few more fights. I think he looked good in the first round. I was surprised that he was out-grappled in the manner that he was. I think Cody could still potentially be a ranked bantamweight. I don't think he'll ever get to a belt again.
No.
But I think, you know, I'm looking at fights there. Like, he could rematch Dominic Cruz. He could fight a Kyla Phillips. He could fight Mario Bautista, maybe. Yeah, I think there's certainly fights there for Cody. And equally, he could fight unranked guys and just have fun knocking them out and, you know, just being a guy that you go, oh, Cody's fighting so-and-so. He'll either get knocked out or finished, or he'll do the knocking out. And that'll be fun for fight nights and prelims of numbered cards and all that stuff. Nothing wrong with that. He'll still earn good money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it was quite some event. It delivered.
It really did.
I'd just completely forgotten that Sterling never got that interview.
So he didn't even get
that's
one.
That's got to be a low point, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Champion in your last fight and not even a post-fight interview in your recent. That is harsh for Sterling, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
But let's
is.
Not let that be the last thing that we talk about.
No.
Max Holloway. Man, I love him.
Yeah.
I love him so much. I really hope Justin Gaethje recovers well and gets some good fights soon as well, because I still love Justin Gaethje, obviously. But Max Holloway, man, it's Max Holloway's world. We're still living in it.
Oh, mate, and I'm very happy to be living in it. Like, what a moment on the biggest card, on the biggest stage, you know, and you do the biggest thing you could have done.
Yeah.
And, like, and it all drops perfectly.
Perfectly.
And, like, and, yeah, long may it continue.
And it all happened in floral shorts. And that's all you need to know.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for watching, guys.
If you've not subscribed, make sure you subscribe. Coming your way soon, we had Arnold Allen in the studio. We'll be releasing that show very soon. And we talked to Arnold about all sorts of fights that are going to be going down, and maybe some that have gone down.
I think we did speak about some of these 300 fights. So, yeah. But we obviously talked to Arnold about the Mobsar fight that he had, about what's
fighting
next
Max.
For him, about fighting Max Holloway and how that was for him, and he's got a couple of funny stories about that, an incident with Jason Herzog as well. So yeah, it's a great episode. Check that out. That'll probably be coming out next week or late this week, one or the other. So yeah, guys, thanks so much for watching. As Stu said, subscribe if you are on YouTube, or and give us a like and all that jazz as well. Leave us a nice comment, start a conversation up, go mad. And if you're listening to this on podcasts, give us a nice little review or a little 5-star, whatever it may be, because that really helps us out as well.
Should also say thanks. We've just gone over 10,000 followers now on TikTok. We must be the two oldest people to have over 10,000 followers on TikTok. But thanks ever so much for supporting us over there. We put up lots of little sort of video clips and bits and pieces over there. So we're most active on TikTok and Instagram. So we are on X and Facebook as well. So whatever is your preferred platform, go and give us a follow over there, drop us us a message, let us know what guests you'd like to hear us chat to, and we'll do our best to make that happen.
Well, the other last thing, just to say thank you very much to Tom Warnock. We've set up this bought a coffee thing. We should have actually said this earlier in the show, but if you have enjoyed the show and you want to buy us a coffee, there is a link in the show notes and other places where you can go and buy us a coffee. It's like a little tip for us, just to say thank you for the content and all that jazz. Thank you, Tom Warnock, who gave us a little tip to buy a coffee recently.
Cheers, mate. We'll see you next time.
Bye.